This is University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you conversations with outstanding personalities on issues of interest to local, national, and international communities. Today we resume our conversation on social medicine and community health with my guest, Dr. Walter J. Lehr, a medical doctor who is president of the Institute of Social Medicine and Community Health in Philadelphia. Welcome back to University Forum.
Delighted to be here again.
We couldn't stop after that one show without continuing to this critical issues related to health.
I just got started.
Yes, I know you did, and we were talking about issues that relate so much to health care and health policies. And I do want to mention something about you as we start off the top of the hour, though, and that has to do with the many awards that you have received on this issue of health and social justice, and you wear a sign right there. What's that sign that you have on there?
Jobs with Justice.
Jobs with Justice.
That's a nationwide effort to join labor unions and community groups in fighting for decent workers' rights and compensation.
Well, you see, you're on all sides, but it's always justice. That's the key issue on this with you. Yeah. And you've gotten some recognition and other kinds of awards and other recognitions, perhaps, that were not actually rewarding.
Well, one that relates exactly to this Jobs with Justice effort is the annual award from Philadelphia's organization that deals with workers' health and safety. The organization is called Philiposh, and they gave me their annual Tony Mazzocchi Award, and I was very pleased and honored to have that. Then a second award, which I'm very delighted and honored to have been given, is the Paul Robeson Award of Philadelphia's Community Fund, Bread and Roses Community Fund. That was for the whole range of activities that I've worked on: women's health and women's rights, gay health and gay rights, as well as I already mentioned, the workers' health, and many different kinds of efforts dealing with good national health policy and programs dealing with health.
On the issue of gay health, what is it that is so important to you, and what was it that came as a recognition from your relationship with that?
Well, being a gay person myself, I was very aware that being gay presented an obstacle to providing care by physicians and gay health workers, and was an obstacle to receipt of care by gay and lesbian people. So in 1975, I decided that this closeted issue had to be taken out of the closet, not just people, but the whole issue of health care and the problems by both the providers and the recipients if they are gay. And so we organized the first activities and scientific sessions at the American Public Health Association in 1976, and we brought the issue out of the closet. We received strong support from the American Public Health Association to move ahead with those educational and advocacy efforts. Then we set up here in Philadelphia, as was happening in many other cities, gay health clinics. The gay health clinic continues to exist in Philadelphia, just celebrating its 30th year. It's now called the Mazzoni Clinic. It does a fantastic job of dealing with a whole range of health issues of lesbians and gay people.
Now, you were the first, if I understand it correctly, the first appointed senior government official in the nation to come out publicly.
I believe I was, yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky because that was when I was working for the state health department, and the governor at that time, Milton Schaap, and the secretary of health at that time, Leonard Bachman, were both very comfortable with the issues of gays. And before I came out publicly in this area, I had checked with both the secretary of health and the governor, and they had said that what I do on my own time is my own business. They had no problem with my being openly gay, long as I did my job. And mm-hmm. So I did my job, which I was paid to do for the State Health Department, and on the side, I helped develop this gay health movement.
And as you speak about the universality of the need for good health to all people, mm-hmm. certainly a part of it is how one deals with different constituent groups.
Correct. And up to that point, the health field, the medical profession, did not realize how much the homophobia, the antagonism to lesbians and gays, interfered with providing proper health care to that part of the population.
What were some of the barriers? What were some of the resentments and problems?
Well, lesbians and gay people who needed health care wouldn't talk about their being gay and how that would relate to whatever medical problems they might have. And so it was not really possible for them to receive proper care. Mm-hmm. And so that was one thing. You know, and then another aspect was gay couples, gay and lesbian couples, could not have visiting rights when one of the member of the couple was in the hospital and, you know, and severely ill. And, of course, now that kind of issue is being focused on whether lesbian and gay couples should have the legal and financial rights that heterosexual couples get from marriage. The whole issue of lesbian and gay health, I think, is now better understood and not so much of a problem as it used to be, although there's still a way to go.
Was the problem exacerbated when the incidence of AIDS arose on the horizon?
Initially, AIDS was called a disease of gays, and it took a couple of years before it became clear that that was a distortion of what the facts were. So part of our efforts on dealing with AIDS, and I was part of the first Philadelphia AIDS organization, was to make clear that AIDS affected all kinds of people, not just gays. And so that situation has become much clearer. And in fact, originally, you know, it was called the gay disease, and now it's recognized, particularly on the international level, that it's not just a gay disease.
Mm-hmm. Because in order to get the correct kinds of treatment, one has to recognize that people are all possible to have this disease.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And medications and all. How, with all these different things that you've done, and you had a talking about APHA now because of American mm-hmm. Public Health Association, the Walter Lehr Student Research Award. What was that all about? Or what is that all about?
Well, my friends and colleagues in the health field, particularly in the public health area, set up that award because I had initiated this bringing out of the closet the gay health. I really appreciated their appreciation. that was very, very nice of them. Yeah,
indeed so.
Uh-huh.
Now, as we continue looking at this in the context of the universal health care issues yeah. and all that, which we started talking somewhat about, and we're still talking about it because we were talking yeah. about different segments and groups,
yeah.
workers, and
yeah.
now we're talking about gays and lesbians and all the people who need to have certain kinds of health care.
Yeah.
Well, how do you deal? What was happening there? What is happening with
all right. you? What I mentioned in our previous conversation was the efforts to get a good national health program, national health insurance or national health service, has over a hundred year history. The first advocacy for a national health, governmental health program was made in 1904, and there have been repeated campaigns over these 100 years for a good national health program. The last effort, and again a failed effort, was during the Clinton administration, because Clinton had promised in his election campaign that he would do something about the health issue. And as soon as he was elected, he set up a commission to design a proposal for a national health plan, and he appointed Hillary Clinton as chair of that commission, and that worked very hard and did a huge amount of listening and gathering suggestions, and came up with a proposal that was over 1,000 pages long and terribly complex and confusing and not workable and went down to total defeat. But our national governments for many years have been unfriendly to a good national health policy. So not only are they not supporting any real national health program as such, but there have been cutbacks constantly on programs that deal with the health and welfare of people. One of my interesting and somewhat funny experiences along that line was when Reagan was first elected, he began this series of cutbacks, and many people throughout the country didn't like what he was proposing, and so there was an effort to develop demonstrations against the cutbacks. And the one in Washington, D.C., directed against the president specifically, was organized by an organization called the Community for Nonviolent Protest, and it proposed and carried out a 30-day protest, the first day of which was focused on health issues, and the most prominent figure that agreed to participate in that protest was a physician, a pediatrician by the name of Ben Spock, who's pretty well known for his book on how to raise children. And Ben was very much in favor of the national health program and was certainly very much opposed to the cuts that Reagan was making, even in the existing federal health programs. And so we had a protest at the White House, and I joined that protest. And we did some nonviolent disobedience and got arrested. And I had the great privilege of sharing a jail cell with Ben Spock overnight.
Whoa.
That's one of the highlights in my political activities. But the funny part of that little experience was what happened on the morning after our arrest when we were in the detention center in the jail in the District of Columbia. And this is a huge room which had almost 100 people, and Ben and I and one or two others were the only white people in that 100 that had been arrested the night the day before and were up for a hearing. And one of the procedural steps taken with all of these arrested people was to check them for drugs. And so everybody who was in the detention cell was given a vial and asked to put some pee in it to be tested for drugs. Ben thought that we white prisoners wouldn't be subjected to this, but we were. And when his name was called to receive his vial, he went and got the vial, and he came back to me, and he said, "Walter, I have a problem." He says, "I don't have any pee." He says, "Why? I've just given it away to a needy person."
Oh.
So I said, "Oh, well, my prostate is such that I can come up with some pee at any time." So we went over to the toilet, which was in the corner, but not totally open. And he slipped his vial to me, and I peed a little bit in his vial, and we weren't caught. And so we were confirmed as real criminals at that point.
Had he really given to somebody, or was he just saying that?
No, not yet.
So he was helping somebody who may have had drugs.
Of course.
That was okay. Well, oh my, I tell you.
So that was quite an experience.
You're listening to University Forum. My guest, Dr. Walter Lehr. We're talking about medical issues, health care plans, and the future of health care in this country. And, of course, in our own area in which we're speaking, Philadelphia. Oh, I tell you.
So, well, anyhow, but the big issue is that we really need a good national health plan. And Congressman John Conyers has introduced again the bill in the Congress to make Medicare available to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only solution to this crazy, exorbitant health care financing system that we now have in the United States.
You know, you mentioned a few years ago about your concern of certain issues as to how they relate to whatever this plan is and how it's delivered as far as services. And you had a list of them. One had to do with accountability, public accountability, which harkens back a little bit to what we were talking about last show on the role of citizen participation and citizen input and all of that, and the rights of healthcare recipients. Could you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. One of my problems, even with expanding Medicare to everybody, is that it's really using the present system of delivery. And in the present system of delivery of medical care, citizens still do not have a proper role. The notion that health care is a public, and medical care is a public service, you know, has to be implemented by having the public in charge. And as it now exists, the public has very little to say about the healthcare, medical care system. Mm. And so, yes, it would be nice. And this is actually in the design for another proposal for a national health service introduced in the Congress originally by Congressman Dellums and now by his successor in Berkeley, California, Congresswoman Lee, a system of health care where the citizens have boards locally and statewide and nationally and are in control of the health system.
Are we really going to see that happen again? Or is it, do you think that will work?
I'm not sure I understand what the word again means.
That's right. We never did have it. But, I mean, you set up a plan for this back. I was thinking back what you said about the health system here in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
But it was tossed
out. Yes. Yeah.
The proposals. Uh-huh. But the notion is there again.
Yeah. I still think that even though a good national health insurance plan would solve a major part of today's problem, the financial part, there still would need to be a solution to the control, the accountability issue in the health field. Yeah.
See, one of the other things that you had mentioned in your listing some time ago was elimination of elitism and classism. Will this level the field?
Yes. Yeah. The notion that the physicians have all of the knowledge and know best about what to do about health, that is gradually being modified, and I think properly modified, so that we now, even in medical circles, talk about the importance of the ordinary citizen knowing as much as possible about their health problems, and the solutions to their health problems, and participate in designing what they should be doing about their health and health problems.
Mm. I wonder how they could actually get that information now. Would it be by asking the physician certain things, interpret certain things, the different use of language, use of internet? How can they be more informed?
Well, it's a variety of ways. You're absolutely correct. The internet now has a huge amount of information about health, and you can Google and get answers to almost anything these days about medical and problems and pharmaceuticals and so forth. And then there are, of course, many books and articles in public media and television programs. And there's also, you know, courses that people can take. Yeah, I think we're moving to a better understanding of the role of individuals in taking responsibility for their health programs, their health needs. Yeah.
I've heard some individuals say that they still would like to have the physician be able to tell them and help them understand and work with them, and that there's been this gap in which the doctor is no longer the person that they can get to really talk with and hear from on terms of their health concerns.
Some of the medical schools are trying to address that issue. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard issue to deal with in the medical curriculum. So many of the young people that go into medicine see it as a really high-tech kind of activity, and that is not a very friendly attitude towards the recipients of medical care. Mm-hmm. And in the high-tech environment, the individual opinions and knowledge are of much less importance than the so-called science of the doctors.
Mm. If you were to consolidate in a way as we again begin to wind down, because our program of two shows isn't half enough to go into all the many things that you've done over the years, what do you feel or think, I put it both ways, feel or think, is really the crux of where we are going and where we hope we will be within some foreseeable future in terms of health care and the social conditions that you're so concerned about?
I'm not very optimistic about the short run. As long as money-making, and particularly greedy money-making, dominates our society and its values, then I don't see it as the possibility for improving the present situation. The health field continues to expand, and some sectors of the health field, particularly the pharmaceutical industry, is the most profitable in industrial sector in the United States. And with that financial success, it is possible for the pharmaceutical industries to buy policy making that favors them. And that all of that adds up to a value system which is not friendly to the people's health.
So we're talking about something that certainly transcends health itself, but the basic values and directions of a society.
Correct.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And where is it going?
At the moment, it doesn't look very good. I suppose if I try to be optimistic, I can recall that over the last decades, when an industry has gone bankrupt that somehow or other seems to be very crucial to our society, like particularly here in Philadelphia area, the Pennsylvania Railroad, then the federal government steps in and works out a federal solution. So to be optimistic in a dark way, when the health system totally crashes, as I think it might.
You do?
Yes. Then the federal government might step in to try to solve the situation.
When you say if it actually crashes, what would that mean? What say that a little bit more.
Well, the doctors stop working.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting point you raise about the doctors stop working, because a lot of these things are happening in hospitals now where doctors are going out because of the insurance factors and all of that.
That's what I'm referring to as moving towards a total crash.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope that Walter J. Lehr is around to help prevent that by pushing people into the other direction a little harder than, if it's at all possible, than you've done over these many years.
Yeah, there are good people in Philadelphia that are working on the proper kinds of solutions to the crisis in the health delivery system.
Well, Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me on University Forum, my old friend and buddy of years going past, to know that you're still standing at the gate, still getting arrested now and then. And still.
Thank you, Jean, for allowing me to talk about all these experiences and opinions that I have.
Well, I thank you for being my guest on University Forum, Dr. Walter J. Lehr, graduate of Harvard University with an MD degree from other schools and master's and, my goodness, Columbia University, but still the same strong, committed person to good health and social justice. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jean Moore. Please send your comments or questions on University Forum programs to me by email, jemoore@temple.edu, or call my voicemail 215-204-4374.